Attendance is Representative Gatto, Representative Herron, Representative Lynn, Representative Ramirez. Thank you. And we are going to take up today under bills previously heard, House Bill 381. And where's your boss? No problem. Come on up. And Representative Herron, it's nice to see you. Can I have a motion to adopt the new CS? Representative Gatto, can you move the new CS, please? Version E as in Eric.
Got it. There's, Chair, I'll move House Bill 26, version LS1534/E.
So without
consideration.
Thank you. So without objection, we have the CS for House Bill number 381, version E as in Eric, before us. And with that, members, you will see a very truncated version of this bill compared to the original version that we've seen. It still will benefit from discussion. With that, we have from our colleague Representative Newman's office with us to testify. Introduce yourself for the record.
Yes, my name is Jim Ellis, staff for Representative Mark Newman.
Welcome, Jim. Tell us what you did and why you did it.
Well, you see in the earlier meeting, discussed a number of issues in the first version of HB 381. And through that process, there came a number of issues that were fairly complex and extremely limited time remaining in session, so that it'd be wise to introduce a CS that would limit it to a single, more defined topic that could be fairly discussed.
Representative Herron?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess a question more to the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, but Mr. Chairman, should complete safety be defined in the statutes?
And complete safety, what do you mean by complete?
No, I mean, it allows, excuse me. Page 1, line 5, with complete safety. Is there a definition of complete safety in the statute, sir?
Page 1, line 5. I think that is an excellent question for us to pose to the Department of Law. Jane, are both of these for this bill? Is that right? This Wendy and OPA and NRA, I assume.
This one's for this bill, and this one's for the personnel.
Okay, all right. Annie, are you here to help us on 381? Is that correct, with the state's point of view? So I think what we'll do is see what questions we have for the bill sponsor, and then I think that question is better reserved for the Department of Law to try and determine. Are there questions for Jim? What we've done really, Jim, in this CS is we have removed the language that was relative to. Can you take us through the CS? Is it just the vehicle language? Is that what was removed, or what other changes are there in the CS, please?
There were other provisions in the original bill. I mean, I'm going to pull it up here. There was a section 2 that spoke to basically the fact that a burglary had occurred or several other crimes of the crime confession and sentence of force and reasonable. That is a quite a number of issues.
Right.
So the CS takes out, removes section 2.
Okay.
And then,
page 2, lines 3 and 4, which dealing with the vehicle, realized that was somewhat basically already covered by what's now lines 5. Very good. Okay. And so I think we'll reserve questions for section 1 for Annie Carpinetti, Representative Herron. Are there any other questions for Jim, the bill sponsor? Seeing none, Representative Lynn?
Well, no, I just had basically the same question. you know, what is complete safety? None of us have that at all.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gatto.
Yes, with you. For Jim, page 2, line 3. Which is the bill.
Right.
If we were to pass the bill, would we need sections 1, 2, 3, and 4?
Sections 1, 2, 3, and 4. You mean section 1?
Correct, section 1.
Oh, I see. And then numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4 right. is what you mean in section 1.
Right.
Jim?
The chair, Representative Gatto. On a couple of them, I'm not entirely sure. There may be some duplication, but we felt it was simpler to simply add a line rather than add and delete.
So, Jim, what does it mean? I'm always fascinated with words, and words in the Judiciary Committee can have quite a great deal of meaning. The legislature, when you have the privilege of serving the legislature, we often confine our learning to the difference between may or shall, you know, and or. So in this case, or in any place where the person has a right to be. What does that mean?
To the chair, my understanding is that would be any place where you would not be considered to be trespassing or otherwise not legally present. So it could be a street, be camping in the riverbank, but it would not be if you were, for instance, in your neighbor's backyard or trespassing on a yard of a store or something like that.
So if I'm reading this correctly, then a person may not use deadly force under this section if the person knows that with complete personal safety and with complete safety as to others being defended, the person can avoid the necessity of using deadly force by leaving the area of the encounter, except there is no duty to leave the area if the person is in any place where the person has a right to be. Kind of circles back around to what Representative Gatto was saying, is what's the point of 1, 2, 3, and 4 other than they offer some specificity.
To the chair, I believe that actually you're correct that 5 would
cover
the
sections.
You
just got a lifeline, Jim.
What?
You just got a lifeline. Mr. Chairman, come join us, please. Representative Newman, we're delighted to have you before the committee. What we were just doing is Representative Gatto posed the question of Representative Herron posed a question that we're going to pose to Department of Law shortly about whether anything can guarantee your complete personal safety. And that was a rhetorical question that we're going to reserve for the reserve. For the Department of Law. And
Mr. Chair,
I'm trying to get in all my questions before you get that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And that concludes my questions. No. So, Representative Newman, Jim's been doing a great job. And so the question that Representative Gatto posed, And I was just reading to the committee, is if we read section 1 beginning on line 4, a person may not use deadly force under this section if the person knows that with complete personal safety and with complete safety as to others being defended, the person can avoid the necessity of using deadly force by leaving the area of the encounter, except there is no duty to leave the area if the person is. And then we skip to line 3. In any place where a person has a right to be. And so we've been joined by Representative Gruenberg and Representative Holmes. And so we're trying to understand what that means, and if number five is so broad, then why do we even need 1, 2, 3, and 4? I think was the question that Representative Gatto asked. So we asked two separate questions. I asked, what does number five mean? And Representative Gatto asked, if we have number five, why do we need 1, 2, 3, and 4? Is that a good way to put it, Representative Gatto?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Through the chair.
Introduce yourself just for the record.
I'm Representative Mark Newman, House District 15, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for hearing CS for House Bill number 381. I believe we're on backslash T. When we look at premises and that a person owns or leases their residence, you know, basically where we're talking about in one, you know, it's a building, it's a place that you either own or lease, or in a building. What section or what number five does is allows you to protect yourself if you're walking down the street, if you are camping, if you have a legal right to be somewhere. And if somebody intrudes that right and threatens you, do you have a right to protect yourself? And this is why we added that there.
So, Representative Newman, how does that expand your rights? What more does that cover than 1, 2, 3, and 4?
Mr. Chair, how that expands your rights is a notable place. If you are in a place where you are allowed to be publicly, this does not mean in somebody else's backyard. This is not, you know, and I'll try and explain that as where you cannot be, maybe, where you're not an invited guest or a place to be. But because line A, you know, on line 9, 1A, it talks about where a person leases or owns a building. In B, where it resides or temporary, so if you rent, or if you're a guest, as in line C says, if you're a guest in a building. So in, if you invited me to your house, or actually, probably more appropriately, if you rented me one of your cabins that you own, then I either own or lease it, or I'm renting it, or I am a guest there. And that's what A, B, and C specifically state. What on line 4, it talks about who, and that's a member, and again, it mentions a person's household on page 2, line 2, where it says household. And so right now, current statutes, it's my understanding, dominantly talk about being in your home or a right to be in there. What line 5 does is, again, is expands your rights in a place where you have the right to be able to protect yourself or your family. If I may, Mr. Chair.
Okay, yes.
Another discussion that we had with Ms. Carpinetti and myself and staff and Brian Judy from the NRA this morning was very interesting, and it somewhat revolved around what was termed as a razor's edge on where you fall on rights. Definitely, we're talking about that. And the ability to protect yourself, and what rights do you give away? What this does not do is it talks about the use of deadly force. You still have to have, there still will have to be a determination of was it justified? Was the use of deadly force justified? So that question will always be there. And if it's found that it was unjustified, well, then you unlawfully used force.
Okay.
And so that, you know, that's kind of the backup to this to make sure that we don't have vigilantism.
Well, I'm pleased that we're going to create a legislative record of what the intent is here for number five. What I'd like to do is it's 120. Annie Carpinetti has to be in Senate Judiciary at 130. So what I'd like to do is to get her testimony, and then I know you're chairing a committee in the adjacent hearing room. So, Jim, if you could just drop back for a second. Annie, if you could come up, maybe sit with Representative Newman and offer us your testimony, and then we'll kind of try and massage the clock because we're aware of the value of your time for both of you to be elsewhere.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I believe Brian Judy is also available.
Well, Brian Judy is on the line standing by, and so is Wendy Hanneman from the Office of Public Advocacy is also standing by. But I'm just mindful of your both the need that exists for both of you to be elsewhere. So, Annie, if you could just address any remarks that you have, and then perhaps answer the question posed by Representative Herron about complete personal safety, and respond to any questions from members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Annie Carpinetti, and I represent the Criminal Division of the Department of Law. I appreciate this committee substitute. We think it is it answers many of our concerns about the original form of the bill. I'm sorry to say that we still have a concern about this section, because we believe it does pretty much eliminate the duty to retreat in our state, which you were only required to do if you know that you can do that retreat in complete safety. And in our state, self-defense is a defense, which means that the state, the prosecution, has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you did not, that you knew that you could retreat in complete safety to yourself and others, and you did not. In response to Representative Gatto's question, we believe that the proposed addition would eliminate the need for paragraphs 1 through 4, because in paragraphs 1 through 4, there are all places where you have a right to be, so you don't need to have those specific or particular places from which you don't need to retreat if you have this more general one. Our statutes do not define complete safety. It may have been dealt with in decisional law, and I'd be happy to research that and find out for you.
Thank you. So from the Department of Law's point of view, this makes a bad bill better.
Through the chair, we have concerns about the bill. It's better than the original. We still have concerns because
does my assessment encapsulate the Department of Law's point of view?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Representative Herron.
thanks, Annie, for the explanation on complete safety. So that leads me to the title of the bill. Generally around here, we worry about what's in the text, but then we also worry about the bill. But isn't that what you're, Mr. Chairman, isn't that what you're talking about, Annie, is it's the issue of self-defense and what you're talking about in retreat?
Through the chair, yes. Representative Newman is absolutely correct. Courts will, or juries will, evaluate whether a person had the, whether the person was justified or not in behaving as he or she did. And that is also, the burden is on the prosecution beyond a reasonable doubt. And then if the person used deadly force, then you come to the next question, whether or not the person had the duty to retreat or not.
Are there any additional questions for Ms. Carpinetti, Representative Gatto, and then Grunberg?
Number five, in any place where the person has a right to be. So let's pick a few places. In a no trespassing.
I won't screw it up.
There's a sign for no trespassing. They have no legal right to be there then.
Through the chair, I believe that would be a place where you had no right to be.
Okay. Are there other places? Let's just say we don't have a no trespassing sign. I don't have one in front of my house. They have a legal right to be in my house.
Through the chair, no, they don't. That would be considered to be breaking and entering or burglary.
Okay, how about walking on my property right there 100 yards from my house?
Through the chair, that would depend on the circumstances, whether your property was signed, no trespassing,
no
whether
signs.
Whether it was clear that that was part of your property. It would depend on that. On the circumstances.
Well, let me add a circumstance, a paved driveway when coming off a dirt road, pretty clear that that paved driveway is leading the only pavement for a mile that goes right up to your house. That would be considered private property, so they have no right to be on the property.
That would be my understanding. That these are always so factually based that it's hard to say completely, but I can generally,
yeah,
correct.
Mr. Chair, I ask because they're perfectly normal here. In many places in the state, you live, there's a road that goes, it's gravel, and it's going on, and you pave your driveway because you like pavement to keep the dust out of your house. person driving down the road, they're okay. But once they get on that pavement, they're on your property. Now, I understand the house part. It doesn't confuse me or anyone here. I'm just concerned about, I don't know if that person's pavement is the extent of their property, or they actually own 160 acres. And I can walk on their property by accident. You don't have a legal right to be there, or you do.
It depends. If it's your property and it's clearly your property, I would say you probably don't have a right to be there.
Unmarked.
It is the season that all of us, even chairs of committees, are called up to the finance committee. So at this point, I'm going to turn over the gavel to Representative Herron. My intent is to hear 381, set it aside until I'm back down in the committee room, and then take up House Bill 348. So my apologies to Brian, Judy, and others, although you're welcome to take testimony, and then I'll be back down as soon as they're done hearing my resolution. So I'm going to turn over the gavel so we can continue our proceedings to Representative Herron, and then we'll take up 381. We'll finish 381 when I get back. We'll put up for a vote at that point. Okay.
Representative Gatto, you wish to continue?
Mr. Chair, I'm just concerned about a person unknowingly walking on property, unless all property everywhere except for public roads and public property is private property. I mean, if it belongs to the university, do I have a legal right to be there? How about to someone's farm? How about I'm out hunting and I walk anywhere? Usually we want to take a peek down someone's power line or something like that. We might have to do it. Where is the legal right to be there and not the legal right to be there if we don't have any identification?
I think I can answer that.
Okay. Annie, do you wish to attempt an answer?
I would love to hear some, Mr. Chairman. I'd love to hear it.
Okay. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Carpinetti, if you would turn to AS 11.46350, paren small b and paren small c. May I read this, please?
I'm sorry, would you repeat that citation?
1146.350.
Thank you.
May I read this for Representative Gatto?
Just a quick housekeeping. Representative Lynn, was it to the point that you're concerned?
Well, I had the previous question, but you lost track.
Well, okay.
No problem. I'll just go ahead.
We'll just blame the other guy.
So. I'm in favor
when
of that.
When in doubt.
But, okay, we'll go right to Representative Lynn after Representative Grunberg, please.
Ms. Carpinetti, would this help you in answering Representative Gatto's question, or do you want me to read the thing?
She can.
Well, the definitions you are...
I think it may answer Representative Gatto's
question. You're welcome to.
Okay, if I may, Mr. Chair. And this is the definitional section for criminal trespass. And there's criminal trespass in the first degree, which is if you enter or remain unlawfully on land with intent to commit a crime on the land, or if you enter or remain unlawfully in a building. And that's a Class A misdemeanor. Class B misdemeanor is in the second degree. If you enter or remain unlawfully in or upon premises or in a propelled vehicle. And here, the definition is enter or remain unlawfully is defined here. The first thing deals with propelled vehicles, but here, for purposes of this section, a person who without intent to commit a crime on the land enters or remains upon unimproved and apparently unused land, which I think was your thing, but maybe a road would not be considered that, which is neither fenced nor otherwise enclosed in a manner designed to exclude intruders, that's like what you were talking about, is privileged to do so unless, and these are the circumstances where they cannot do so, unless, number one, there's notice against trespass is personally communicated to that person by the owner of the land or some other authorized person, unless I go up to you and say, you can't be on my land.
Okay, Representative Gruber, let's take an ease, and we'll let Representative Gatto peruse that, and then we'll come on. Susan, we're off the record. Representative Gruber?
To Ms. Carpinetti. Representative Gatto asked one question. I don't know whether I didn't finish reading the whole thing. How about his hypo if you're on the road? The road going, it's not marked or anything, there's a mailbox, and you're on the road. If you're on that road, is it trespassing or not?
Through the chair, I think it really depends on the circumstances. If the road is marked as a private road, as described in this section, it would be, and it's clearly a driveway and it's marked as private property, then you would not have a right to be there. If it's apparently a public road and it is not marked, I think you would.
Just a mailbox. It doesn't say this is private, but you know, like you're out in Wasilla or something, and there's a mailbox, and it may or may not say the Gattos, but it's clearly a mailbox. Then that would be private, I assume.
That's my assumption too, but it always depends on the circumstances.
Thank you.
I wouldn't be afraid of Representative Gatto. I'd be afraid of Representative Gruber. Just kidding.
I hope not.
Representative Lynn.
We're marshmallows at the Epstein Group.
Well, I think it may indirectly have been answered already, but of course, I think, I don't know what the legal term is, maybe license, I'm not sure. The mailman, the guy coming in to fix your TV, a kid retrieves a ball that's been thrown onto your property, or a model airplane goes onto the property. These types, is this not a license? Presumed or something. There used to be a legal term I knew, but this would not be trespassing.
Through the chair, certainly somebody who was invited in, and this goes back to old property concepts of invitees, a person who is invited into a home or onto property has a right to be there.
And retrieving a ball or their model airplane, same thing, right?
I think it depends on the circumstances.
That's all it was.
Representative Gatto.
Let's just make up a story. I hate my neighbor's dog with a passion. It's an opportunity for me to bait the dog in and then kill it on my property. Is that a legal act on my part?
Through the chair, I guess I would have to think about that. It's not against the law. I mean, it would probably be, it may be considered criminal mischief because you are taking the value of somebody else's property away. On the other hand, if that dog was trespassing, I guess I'd have to think about that. That's a tough question.
Okay, because I wanted to go to Mr. Chair to the next point. There's the dog. Now here comes the owner. Walks on my property unannounced, uninvited, and in fact asked not to do that. He walks on my property. This bill passes. He has no legal right to be there. I have a legal right to be there. He's coming in to get his dog, I think. But maybe he's mad at me for who knows what. And I say, well, self-defense is self-defense. I have a legal right to be on my own property. Too bad for you.
Well, through the chair, you under our law, you don't have a duty to retreat when you're on your own property. There is no duty to retreat when you're on your own property under current law. This would make no change to that.
So you want to own a lot of acres.
Okay. Seeing no other questions, Representative Holmes.
Thank you. Just to be clear on the position, you have there are sections in, and I'm referring to the letter from the Department of Law from March 15th, which was written to the old section, but refers to this change as well, that you still, I believe, maintain your objections that related to this, what's now subsection 5, it was subsection 6 in the old bill. And if I may read very briefly, Mr. Chairman, on page 1, it says, if person A could avoid killing person B while walking away, he, she would no longer be required to do so, but instead would be authorized by law to kill person B. I believe that still applies to the bill in front of us.
Through the chair, that's correct.
And, Mr. Chairman, then on page 3, it says that the proposed subsection would almost completely eliminate the duty to retreat, and that still is a concern under the bill.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holmes, that's correct. Okay. That's still our concern.
Thank you.
So, Annie, the page 2, line 3, in any place where a person has a right to be, is this a rewrite from the previous iteration, basically without specifying it, it's, for example, a vehicle on a public road. Is that?
I'm sorry. It's a, what it does, Mr. Chairman, is it eliminates in the original bill what was paragraph 5 and just makes what is in the original bill paragraph 6 is now paragraph 5.
Yep. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You have enunciated a rule a minute ago, and I'm afraid I may not have been here when the bill was really discussed at all times before. Maybe you've done this before. Did you discuss with the bill sponsor the possibility of putting the current law into statute, the current case law that you mentioned, that that you only have a duty to retreat when you know you can safely do so? As I understood it, that was the basic principle of the current state of the common law. Am I right?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruenberg, that is in the statute right now. It's in the lead-in on page 1 of this committee substitute. It's 1181.335B, and it does set forth the fact that you only have to retreat if you know that you can do so with complete personal safety and with complete safety to the others being defended. And the state has the burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that you knew that.
Did you, if I may please, did you discuss with the sponsor the possibility of putting in the current state of this shifting, well, the burden of going forward to raise the issue, I assume that's on the defendant, but then the duty to rebut it beyond a reasonable doubt continues with the prosecution. I assume that the defendant must raise the issue.
Through the chair, that's correct. We discussed that. The burden of going forward and then the burden of proof.
And did you discuss that as a possible way of getting away from these, quote, geographical areas?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gruenberg, we discussed in general terms the duty of presenting some evidence of self-defense and then the burden on the prosecution. But we did not discuss writing that down in any other way besides the way it's written in current statute.
Mr. Chair, because that might, and I guess we do have a gentleman here from Representative Gatto's office. You're from Newman. Representative Gatto's
Newman.
Office, aren't
Newman.
You?
Newman.
Newman.
No.
Oh, Representative, I'm sorry, not Gatto, Newman. You're from Representative Newman's office, yeah. If we were to put that in to indicate that the burden to disprove the defense is on the prosecution beyond a reasonable doubt, all the defendant has to do is put in some evidence enough to raise the issue, like to say, gee, I thought he was going to go after me. And then the duty to disprove it, to show that didn't occur, is back on the prosecution. And it's the highest burden in the law, beyond a reasonable doubt.
Is that not current law?
Please state your name for the record, and if you could answer the question.
Jim Ellis, staff representative Newman. I need to talk to Representative Newman.
Of course.
I can't speak for him on that.
Of course.
My understanding with current law is that if you raise the defense that it does have to go be proven, then the burden shifts to the prosecutors and you need to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
But that's correct, and through the chair. And I'm just saying, if we were to put that into the statute, so it's clear from a reading of the statute that this kind of convoluted legal principle is very apparent to everybody from the reading of the statute, and you don't have to get a criminal lawyer to tell you what the law is. And I'm trying to think of some way to find something that everybody can live with here. I mean, not necessarily that you would lose the votes on the committee, but I'm trying to think of something that might make some lemonade here out of these lemons.
So let me understand that, as Representative Gruenberg, you want to, you're saying that the statutes are not convoluted and you want to put some another convoluted provision? I mean, that's what you said.
No, yeah. What I'm saying is that this is kind of a convoluted area in the law.
Oh, okay.
And you cannot tell that from reading the statute. You have to go and read a bunch of law books, which some of us do for fun and profit, but most people have better things to read. And if this were simply put in here to modify this whole thing, to lay out for the person, every policeman on the beat, every lawyer who only practices family law, every person who might pick up a law book, that might make it extremely clear.
A couple people in the queue here. Representative Holmes, then Representative Gatto.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for Annie. One of my concerns with the bill as written, and I was hoping you could kind of weigh in on this, is gang violence. A lot of these, what this bill, in my reading, would do is extend this no duty to retreat to anywhere you have a lawful right to be. We've talked about it in your letter. There are, you know, the Diamond Center shootings, the shootings in the parks, and things that end up being gang violence, but it's not just gang members, because you've got members of the public milling around. Maybe you're at a soccer game, maybe you're in a crowded mall. Do you share my concern at all that this might unwittingly, I know it's unwittingly, I know this is not at all the sponsor's intention, I'm not trying to imply that it is, but that it might unwittingly legalize what's basically gang shootings or gang violence?
Yes, we share that concern. Yes, the burden is beyond a reasonable doubt on the prosecution, and it may just be that we couldn't prove it on either side. And that's the first thing that police say that gang members say. The other side's right.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. They say that in high school, too. is there a place in the statutes where the affirmative defense is located, or is it in separate areas?
Through the chair, this is not an affirmative defense. An affirmative defense is one that the defense has to carry, has the burden of proving. This is a defense which the prosecution has the burden of disproving beyond a reasonable doubt.
And is it easy for me to find that? So
it's in the justification section of Title 11.
Through the chair. And if we repeated it here, is it not normal to have a statute in place A? Do we repeal it there and place it here, or just put it in both places? Or is there does it make conflicting opinions if it's in two places?
Through the chair, I would want to give any drafting of something like that serious consideration, because you would not want to confuse the matter. And it would be unusual to put it in two places.
Okay. We have Wendy Hanneman is Office of Public Advocacy. She's available for questions. And we have Ryan Judy, National Rifle Association, that has signed up to testify. So why don't we take testimony, and then we'll set the bill aside per the request of the chairman when he returns from finance. Ryan Judy, are you online?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. It's Brian Judy.
Please, if you have any testimony, provide it.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Brian Judy speaking for the National Rifle Association. I testified the first time this bill was heard. I'll try not to repeat what the points I made there. I'll try to bring clarity back to the intent of this bill. It seems to me it's a lot more simple than it's turning into. It seems that we're really getting wrapped around the axle. But here's the bottom line. When a person is facing a criminal threat, there are two things or two questions that person has to answer in their mind. First of all, are they justified in using deadly force? And two, can they retreat with complete safety? Now, it's our position that if a person, the position of the National Rifle Association, that if a person, if a potential victim is in a place where they have a legal right to be, they shouldn't have to bother themselves with that life or death question in the split second decision-making process that they're going through. If they don't have to retreat from a lawful place, they're still perhaps going to have to justify their actions. They're still going to have they're still going to be liable for prosecution that they were not justified. So this bill doesn't change this. All it does is remove the duty to retreat. Does not remove the need for justification. So with regard to gang violence, gang violence, it seems to me, is a whole separate issue, because you need to justify your actions. You have to be justified. You know, gang members aren't going to retreat regardless, it seems to me. If gang members, you know, are getting in the kind of activities gang members do, they're not looking to retreat. They're looking to advance. But they're still going to be hopefully prosecuted, and they're going to somehow have to try to justify that they were acting in self-defense. Well, if they're involved in a criminal activity, then that's a whole different issue. So all we're trying to do is protect the law-abiding citizen who's about to become a criminal and take one of the two life or death split-second decisions that they have to make out of the equation.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Per the chairman's request, we'll set this aside until he returns. Susan, I think we'll go ahead and move to House Bill 348. And okay. Representative Lynn, do you wish to present your bill, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is House Bill 348, and the idea is to bring a greater range of representation to the personnel board so it can operate, or at least appear to operate, with a greater independence when addressing complaints and carrying out its powers and duties. Basically, the bill increases membership from 3 to 5 members, and that allows the governor to make an appointment from at least 3 people nominated by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, subject to the right of the governor to request additional recommendations. It also ensures the board has at least 1 member of each of the 2 parties that got the most votes in the previous election. As the board is currently constructed, you may have remembered some of this controversy. It kind of lends itself to criticism that it could be a creature of the governor rather than a totally independent body when it comes to investigating executive branch ethics complaints. As you know, the perception can be the same as reality in the public eye. You remember the former governor issued a complaint against herself, which was investigated by the board, was she herself appointed, or at least a portion of that board. Like other ethics-related measures we worked on here, the purpose of the bill is to build a better foundation of trust between, people of Alaska and those they elect to public office, including the governor. The way it is now, it appears sometimes to have the appearance of the fox watching the hen house when it comes to investigative complaints involved with the executive branch. And with your permission, I'd like to ask my trusty aide, Michael Seeger, to come up and walk us through the details of this bill.
Yes, please come forward. But in the meantime, I was hoping to seek clarification. As in your reference to the former governor, you didn't call her a fox, did you?
Well, she was, actually. But that's... I don't think many people would debate us on that.
It's all in the words, what the chairman said. It's always in the words.
The current governor, I think, is a good man, but he's not foxy.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to stay really far away from that whole discussion.
Just seeking clarification. Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and you're going to explain the differences between the two versions, sir?
Sure.
Please, go ahead.
Chairman Herron and members of the board, my name is Mike Sika, and I work for Representative Bob Lynn. Okay. I could tell you real quickly that I'll just walk the bill real quickly. Representative Lynn referred to this. Most of the changes you'll see in this bill happen in that first section, where we increase the membership from 3 to 5. That's the same as it was. The governor makes the appointment from a list of 3 nominees selected by the Chief Justice of the Alaska Supreme Court, subject to the right of the governor to request additional nominations. That's still there, same. And basically, the third one is the candidate for governor. One member will be from the political party of the candidate for governor who received the highest number of votes, and one member of the party of the candidate for governor who received the second highest most votes. Section 2 is just a conforming language. We went from 3 members to 5. So now, instead of not more than 2 members, it's now not more than 3 members, maybe members of the same political party. The 2 changes in the bill from the state affairs version happen in Section 3. We simply, on page 2, line 14, added the word political at the very end of the line before the word group, okay? And the other change was on page 2, line 16 had originally said lobby, employ a lobbyist or assist a lobbyist. We broke that up into 3 paragraphs, I guess they're called, okay? And we put lobby by itself. We put clearly stated employ a lobbyist, and we went with assist in lobbying as opposed to assist the lobbyist. So it was clear that it was the action that we were covering. Okay. Section 4, again, is just conforming language on what constitutes a quorum and an affirmative vote. And the Section 5, the uncodified section, is still the same about once this takes effect, how these 2 new members would join the board. And I just have a few general comments about the bill, if that's okay. We feel this is really a friendly bill to everyone involved. The personnel board with the people on it wanted it to become this way. It's become very visible, of great interest to the public. You look at the minutes of their meetings, the stories that are covered on it. It's not just in their capacity of investigating the governor or the lieutenant governor or the attorney general or looking or reviewing ethics investigations of other employees and also board and commission members, but there are public policy questions raised at their meetings that are very important. One example was at one meeting they talked about how do we publicize the cost of dealing with all these complaints without violating our confidential requirements. There was another one talking about recovering fees from people who file frivolous complaints. So, and I think the other thing we want to state in the record, they have a very difficult job with 3 people on that board. What happens if someone's not there? You have a quorum of 2, and who breaks the tie? And, you know, it's very difficult for them. We're here to help the board, the governor, by insulating the governor, we think. If you read the description of the personnel board, just real quickly, on the state site, it says the personnel board, as also created by the Personnel Act, is an independent agency composed of members appointed by the governor. We just want to put the independent in the agency, and we want to help them. And I think it'll help the critics, the supporters of the board, the public, and everyone involved.
Thank you. Questions for the sponsor's representative, Representative Gatto?
Thank you. Page 1, very bottom, line 15, the words, until a successor is confirmed. Would this give the governor the opportunity to have a person on the board for 7 years because he simply doesn't submit names for confirmation?
Through the chair.
Right.
Okay. I think, I don't know if that's the case. I wish the director was on board, but I think this was put in there. In the event the legislature does not confirm someone during the interim, you need someone to be on the board and to serve. So I don't think it was so much. I don't know if that's possible.
Representative Gatto.
Follow up. Thank you. Well, we often have intents, and sometimes we don't see the side effects or unintended consequences. But if I read this correctly, and then we can have a lawyer look at this and see if I'm right, until the governor submits names, this guy, whoever it is on the board until the governor submits names for confirmation. So we've now left it in the governor's power. If the governor wanted to, and I don't know any governor that would, but do we want to make some stipulations that no person may serve through more than five sets of denials? Something along those lines, Mr. Chair, just trying to make sure that we tighten up language.
Representative Gatto, we have three people that may wish to comment on that. So if there's no other questions for the sponsor's representative, we'll take testimony. Five people have signed up. Two are available for questions. Those for questions is Joan Wilkerson from the Department of Law and Nikki Neal from Department of Administration. But the people that have signed up to testify, we'll start with Judy Bachman in Anchorage.
Thank you, Chair. I am Assistant Attorney General Judy Bachman from the Department of Law, and I can't probably help with that last question. I wanted to just offer a couple of comments on Section 3 of the bill, and mostly just to express a concern with possible unintended consequences with some of the restrictions imposed and asked for perhaps clarification.
Okay. Chairman Ramos has returned. Sir, you can have the gavel back. We took comments from Judy Bachman, Department of Law, on Section 3 of the bill. And for the chairman's information, Judy, could you please share your comments so that he can get back in the swing of things here, sir? Madam? Judy?
She ran for it.
Mr. Chairman, I would then ask Doug Wilfer to come up, and then we have Mike Ford behind that.
Okay.
Sir, you're on board.
Did you get cut off?
I don't know.
Maybe we could ask the lady who's running the show, right?
Yeah, okay.
This is Judy Bachman. I don't know how I got disconnected, but I am back on at this point.
So, Judy, this is Representative Herron, and the chairman has returned. And you're the first one to testify, and you had a comment on Section 3 of the bill. Could you please restate those comments, and then the chairman will continue with the rest of the meeting.
Thank you. Through the chair, again, I'm Judy Bachman, Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. And we wanted to just express comments or concerns regarding the scope of the restrictions in Section 3 generally. That section adds some prohibitions on certain kinds of conduct, campaigning and lobbying, as has been previously commented about. And at the prior hearing on this bill, the discussion was generally in the context of the members of the Personnel Board. But the proposed new section also would place these restrictions on employees of the board and persons under contract. And to comment generally, and the director of personnel might be able to elaborate on this, but although the board has authority to hire employees, in fact, the executive director is the director of personnel, and the staff of the director of personnel served in partial capacity to support the board. So in imposing these restrictions, the question arises, is the intention to impose them on employees uniquely hired by the board for some purpose, or would they be imposed on the Department of Administration employees now working for the Department of Personnel, and how do they relate to the general restrictions or rights and responsibilities, I think is how it's titled in the Personnel Act in 3925.178. Then the third category to whom these restrictions are applied are persons under contract. I assume that is principally intended to address the independent counsel that the personnel board hires to investigate ethics complaints against the governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general. And the question there would be, are the restrictions on the one individual person or the perhaps law firm that most of these independent counsel in the last couple of years have been attorneys working for firms. Sometimes they use staff to support the function of independent counsel in their firms. Sometimes the firms have offices outside of the state of Alaska, and I would ask for clarification of the intent on the scope of the restriction on persons such as the independent counsel that might be under contract. And then if we look at the particular restrictions, it's my understanding that the language was taken from the APOC provisions for members of APOC, and to my mind, or to what I could find, the restrictions are only imposed on the members, not the employees that APOC hires, but I looked but didn't find any restrictions on APOC employees. And the restrictions make sense in the context of APOC because they regulate campaigns, political activities, and lobbying, but I wonder if they serve the same purpose with respect to members of the personnel board. For example, and particularly with respect to lobbying, those terms aren't defined in this context, and it would seem to cover any kind of lobbying. And the members of the personnel board are volunteers who may come out of small business or work in human resources for a larger company. And is the intention to restrict these individuals from contacting and lobbying in a simple sense their legislatures on matters that may be of importance to their business and totally unrelated to any personnel board activity? So I would ask that some look be given to just what the scope of these restrictions are, and before you proceed on with imposing them on these three different groups. And I think that's generally the comments I wanted to offer. I appreciate the goals. This has been an unusual period, and the three members at this point have worked very hard on the ethics matters to deal with them independently, and I think the workload demands have increased, and hopefully they'll slow down in this area. But I'm happy to take any comments.
Thank you very much.
For questions.
They were really directed to Mr. Seacott, I think.
Understood. Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You know, I believe you've made a good point. When we talk about an employee of the board or a person under contract could be the custodian who cleans up at night. An employee of the board could be somebody who just rewrites your notes for you. I don't believe we intend to eliminate those people as people who might have a special interest. So are you, and I'm guessing whether you, curious to know whether you agree that that was the exact idea that you were mentioning.
Yes, this is Judy Bachman again. I think the concern just in reading this in its own context is what is the scope of the restrictions on an employee, and which employee do we mean? Do we mean Department of Administration employees who work for the Director of Personnel, or are we talking about some other person hired by the board, which they do have authority to hire? And again, you know, who is the person under contract? In the one context, the independent counsel, I even question whether broad restrictions on lobbying, it may be the appropriate limitation. In other places in the Ethics Act, anyway, there are restrictions with respect to registered lobbyists, and I'm not a fully versed APOC-type attorney, but there are different kinds of lobbyists. There are registered lobbyists. those who I work for compensation full-time, and there are others that are viewed, I think, as recreational lobbyists and individuals who may lobby for their own interests, and I wanted to just make sure that when the committee was considering their bill, they considered the breadth of the restrictions being imposed, even on someone like an independent counsel. And, I mean, is it intended to prohibit some other member of an attorney's firm, perhaps in another state, from campaigning for elective office? Probably not, but it could be read that way.
Mr. Chair. Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, I think Ms. Bachman, as usual, has a good point. I, by the way, I've worked with her on other legislation. I think she's a very good attorney. I'd just like to put that on the record. I don't know if I've ever said that. But,
thank you.
When she's talking here, in the legal sense, is imputed disqualification for a conflict of interest. And if there's a conflict of interest or something like this, often the entire law firm's disqualified, and this can be a 100-person law firm or something. And maybe I can cut to the chase, Mr. Chair. I think a way of dealing with this would be an amendment on lines 9 and 10 to delete the comma after personnel board and everything after that down to may not on line 10. So, oh, I see. Yes, I'm sorry. We would have to delete on line 8 the phrase and board employers and employees and contractors. That's from Ms. Pearson. Thank you, Jane. And then on line 9 and 10, delete comma, an employee of the board, comma, or a person under contract to provide personal services to the board. So it would just read, Mr. Chair, prohibited. I'm sorry, what? Yes, of course. Thanks, Jane. This probably should be conceptual if we're going to do it. And then on lines 11 and 12, delete the phrase, or during the term. No, it would have to be everything on line 11 from or employment or during the terms of the person's contract. That would go also. So the language, Mr. Chair, I think she's talking about, so that this introductory paragraph would read, prohibited conduct by board members. A member of the personnel board may not during the person's term of office, and then you go down to 1, 2, and 3. I think, if I may, Mr. Chair, Ms. Bachman, isn't that kind of where you were going?
Yes, this is Judy Bachman. The question being, should these restrictions be applied to employees and people under contract? And either they shouldn't, or the scope of the restrictions need to be, that the intent needs to be clarified, because I think they can be read very broadly. But your solution, Representative Grunberg, would be one way to handle it.
Representative Gatto.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Chair. Judy, I had another question. On line 11, page 2, when we talk about the person's term of office and the end of the sentence, during the term of the person's contract. So we're talking about a person. But in the beginning of this section, we're talking about board members, an employee of the board under contract. That was all very confusing to me, because when we talk about the persons, we're talking about a member of the board. But the restrictions were to an employee of the board or a person under contract. I could not get my arms around this and have it make sense. So do you feel like Representative Grunberg's offer of an amendment is going to satisfy all the things that were difficult here?
Mr. Chair, may I leap in for a second?
Representative Gatto, Representative Grunberg would like to help you.
I think, Representative Gatto, through the chair, if we're going to do that, you've got a good point, and probably instead of person on line 11, it would be members' term of office.
Where are we at here? Have we heard from the folks that want to testify? We heard from Mike Ford and from Doug Wolver, because I don't want to jump into amendments here.
No.
But I
was just kind of questioning. I'm not offering anything.
Okay.
Yep.
So
Mike Ford hadn't been up yet.
Thank you very much, Representative Lynn. So we've heard from you, Doug. Okay. What I'd like to do is, Mike, have you just take a seat back. Let's hear from Mike and from Doug, please. And then we also have Joan Wilkerson and Nikki Neal available. Doug, if you'll introduce yourself and offer us your thoughts for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Doug Wolliver, Administrative Attorney for the Alaska Court System. As you know, the court doesn't generally support or oppose bills. We don't support or oppose this bill. But the court did ask me to just raise one, I guess it's a level of discomfort with a bill like this. The court doesn't oppose it. We're not trying to slow it down or stop it. But as you know, the court, the Chief Justice now appoints or suggests names to the legislature for ethics, for your ethics committee. And then you go through the confirmation process. Those names come from the Chief Justice. This bill is similar to that. We have a long history of doing that. We've done that since 1986. This board, they see, is slightly different because it has a lot of responsibilities outside of just handling ethics issues. They give final approval to the executive branch, the personnel rules. They can make changes in personnel in terms of from the classified service to the exempt service and back. And so the court is just asking me to say that even a relatively minor and indirect role in the personnel management of another branch is something that they take on a little bit reluctantly. But that's the end of my comments.
Thank you. Questions for Doug? We appreciate the concerns of the court system are on the record. Mike?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mike Ford. I'm an Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law. And what my comments today are going to be directed to is Section 1 of the bill. And in the prior committee, Labor and Commerce, we raised a constitutional issue contained in Section 1, and that concerns the insertion of the judicial branch into the appointment process. As we know, under Article 3, Section 26 of the Alaska Constitution, the governor has the power to appoint members of boards and commissions. We view the insertion of the Supreme Court here as an encroachment on those powers. So we're simply raising for your consideration possibly a separation of powers problem. If you look at the case law in this area, Bradner v. Hammond, it's a 1976 case, excuse me, 79 case, that suggests that expansion of the or this kind of mechanism would not be looked favorably upon by the court. So that's pretty much my my comment. We just want to raise that for your consideration, and be happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mike? Mike, I don't see any. We thank you very much for your testimony. We also have Joan Wilkerson. Also from law, and Nikki Neal from Department of Administration, available for questions. Any members wish to question them? All right. Is there anybody else in the room who wishes to testify on this bill? Anybody online? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. We'll bring this back before the committee for action. I see an amendment by Representative Lynn. And then another amendment by Representative Grunberg. Representative Grunberg, I'm just going to anticipate that you're going to want to amend your own amendment, so I'm going to take up Representative Lynn's amendment first while you work on how you really want your amendment to read. Representative Lynn, do you want to move amendment number
one? I move amendment number one. That's 1360 / E dot one.
So we have amendment E dot one by Representative Lynn. Is there an objection? Seeing no objection, amendment number one passes from committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Herron?
While you were out of the committee room, during the sponsor's statements, he referred to our former governor as a fox.
Mr. Chairman, you don't have to comment on that unless
you're duly noted. Duly noted. Representative Grunberg, you have amendment number two. Do you wish to offer amendment number two, and do you wish to make changes to it?
I have Thank you, I found this. Okay, yes.
You want us to take a brief at ease?
No, no, I'm okay.
Organize your thoughts?
Yeah, if somebody...
How much time do we have?
Okay, we have given out amendment number two, and it's page one, line 10.
Yes. You'd like to move amendment number two?
I move amendment number two.
Is there an objection to amendment number two?
For discussion.
Representative Gatto objects for the purposes of discussion. Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As those of us on state affairs will recall, on lines 10 and 12 of page 1, we discussed this issue, and I promised to bring an amendment before the Judiciary Committee when the bill moved to this committee. In the Hickel situation, the candidate, Wally Hickel, who received the highest number of votes, was not a member of a major party. He was an Alaskan independent. And what this would do, if the bill's not amended, would say that they appoint a couple, they have, they must at least have one person on the board, and the second largest candidate would have been the Republican in that case, would have received somebody on the board, but there wouldn't have been any Democrat, we'll say, or vice versa. Okay. And what this does is it basically requires that the two largest parties in the state each have at least one member of the board, and that's what it does, because this is supposed to be bipartisan, and we could have all kinds of minor parties around it.
Representative Gatto, is the amendment, the objection maintained?
So far, I just need a little more discussion. You referred to just in case a person is an independent wins.
Then there's no party.
But they got the highest number of votes, so they're in. But
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is supposed to be a, quote, bipartisan. The other people can all be independent. But the purpose of the bill itself by the chair of the State Affairs Committee.
Don't touch the chair of State Affairs. You're just going to have to make your own point without any touching of any other members. You touched them.
There's some people here, Robert.
It's a personal foul, you know. Representative Lynn. Representative Gruenberg.
If I were a chicken, I'd yell foul.
I use a pun, go to jail.
So the purpose is to require that there be a member of each of the two major political groups, I think. And this simply doesn't prohibit the other people from being nonpartisan. But the sponsor, I believe, wanted to have a member of the two largest parties on there.
Withdrawn.
The objection is withdrawn. Amendment number two passes from committee. We now have Representative Gruenberg has passed out a handwritten conceptual amendment. This would be amendment number three. Starts on page 2, lines 8 through 13. Representative Gruenberg, do you wish to move amendment number 3?
Yes.
Well, go ahead.
Representative Gruenberg moves amendment number 3. Is there an objection?
Look at that.
Without objection, amendment number 3 passes from committee.
I may say something.
Representative Gruenberg.
We took up and we discussed in the State Affairs Committee the kinds of things that Mr. Willover and Mr. Ford were talking about, whether the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court should be involved or not. And I have amendments prepared, but I withdrew them because the members of the committee were not in favor of the mess that you two folks would recall. I'm happy to distribute them for a discussion, but that didn't have support of that particular committee. I have them here, though.
Prerogative of the chair.
Representative Lynn.
Prerogative of the chair.
The chair is very content with this bill in its current, in its present form.
So am I.
As is the bill sponsor. Are there any other amendments to House Bill 348?
Have a Mr. Willover come up, please.
Mr. Willover, would you join us, please?
Mr. Chairman, Doug Willover, administrative attorney for the Alaska Court System.
It's nice to see you again, Mr. Willover. Representative Gatto.
Thank you. Do the courts, well, you mentioned it,
that maybe the courts shouldn't be involved in separation of powers, but do they actually object to submitting a list of names, or simply, we don't care, I don't think it's a good idea, but we don't have an alternative idea? Is there an alternative idea, or if not, are the courts okay with supplying the list?
Through the chair, Representative Gatto, the court is okay with supplying a list. It's just something we would prefer not to be involved with. But if this bill passes, the court won't have any trouble submitting.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Are you satisfied? Any other amendments to 348? If not, the chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move CS for House Bill 348 as amended, with committee with individual recommendations and any fiscal notes.
Thank you. Seeing no objection, 348 moves from committee. We'll take a brief at ease.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Susan, you got a copy of this? Back up here. We have the committee has moved back to House Bill 381. We've taken public testimony. Is there anybody else in the room or online that wishes to testify on 381? Seeing none, I'm going to close public testimony. Are there any amendments? Anybody wish to offer comments or any amendment to House Bill 381? Any questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, we thank you very much, Jim. No amendments here at the table. Any discussion as the bill comes back before the committee? The chair would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move CS for House Bill 381, 1534 Black/E, with individual recommendations and any attached fiscal notes.
Thank you. Representative Gatto?
May I object, please?
Yeah, Representative Gatto objects.
I just wondered if it might be sensible to make an amendment to remove Section 1B, 1, 2, and 3, and 4, because the bill is all about number 5.
I'm going to object to that amendment because I don't think that's the will of the sponsor. This bill goes on to the Finance Committee, and Jim, could you come up here, please? Jim, because sometimes legislative intent and our log notes get lost on the way, would you commit to Representative Gatto that the sponsor will either, Representative Gatto, would your office be willing to write a short note that will become part of the packet, or we could have the bill sponsor indicate that there was an amendment offered to delete 1, 2, 3, and 4, that 5 became so encompassing? My own personal sense is I like the specificity that is offered by 1, 2, 3, and 4. So I'm going to object to the amendment, but I recognize the value of the amendment because number 5 is so encompassing, and I would like to see some kind of a letter be included in this packet that is indicative of the fact that 5 is an umbrella over the whole the whole bill. Representative Grunberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that we'd have to do a little more crafting with the amendment, because number 1 deals with where this occurs. Number 2 is who this applies to. It's not where it occurs. Number 3 is where it occurs. And number 4 is what the person is doing. So, you know, if you're going to substitute 5 for anything, it would be numbers 1 and 3, not numbers 2 and 4.
Clarification. Representative Herring?
Yeah, in this discussion, I intend to not support the amendment, but I'll just put it on the record that maybe the title should be changed where it says an act relating to self-defense in any place where the person has a right to be.
Representative Grunberg?
Mr. Chair, with all due respect to the sponsor of this, we have seen some of us have seen bills come back in totally different form, and I would support a narrowing of the title. I think that's something that's within this committee's jurisdiction, and it'll come back in the final days. It could be jammed, and Mr. Chair, I was wondering If we were to do an amendment like Representative Herron suggested, would that be okay with the sponsor?
Jim?
Through the chair, Representative, I don't feel comfortable speaking for the representative.
Okay, we'll take a brief at ease. I'm going to go grab it. He said he's Newman, Representative Newman, a concern. The committee is prepared to move your bill from committee, and so the issues that have been brought up is right now Amendment Number One is on the table by Representative Gatto, and I objected, and that is to delete numbers 1, 2, 3, and 4 because number 5 is so encompassing. Representative Gruenberg has pointed out that number 5 really only addresses 1 and 3, and that 2 and 4 would have to remain. Representative Herron has indicated that he does not support the amendment. And then a second issue that was brought up was whether we would be interested in narrowing the title so that it doesn't turn into a predatory fish bill. So, with that, if you'll just stand by for a second, I'm going to maintain my objection to the amendment, Amendment Number One. Representative Gatto?
Mr. Chair, I have not offered the amendment. It was, I think I began the conversation with the word, would it be reasonable?
All right.
And therefore, we have nothing to deal with.
So, Susan, there is no Amendment Number One, and Representative Gatto, you're not going to offer anything.
Right.
Is that correct? So now we have before us the discussion on the title. And a concern from our Representative Herron and Gruenberg that although they're supportive of the legislation, they're concerned that the title could be manipulated in the waning days of the legislature. Well, we wanted to get your feedback on how you feel about the title and how we may address a narrowing of the title that would be satisfactory to the sponsor and yet satisfy the concerns of Judiciary Committee members who think we have an obligation to pass along a bill that can't turn into a freight train. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first blush is because they're conceptual. We have the ability, I think, to try and work them as we see any implications of them. And I certainly appreciate the assistance with the committee and their knowledge.
Representative Newman, are you comfortable with the narrowing of the title? I think is my question.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. All right. So with that, we'll take a brief at ease. Representative Herron would like to offer conceptual amendment number one. Representative Herron.
Mr. Chairman, line one, page one, after defense, add in any place where the person has a right to be.
Is there an objection to amendment number one? Seeing no objection, conceptual amendment number one is adopted as a title change to House Bill 381, version E. Are there any other amendments? Seeing none, the chair would entertain a motion.
You want me to restate the motion because we had a motion to move it.
We did, but Susan, are we moving okay for you?
Yeah.
Okay. So at this time, we will, because we did it, we did an amendment, and we did an amendment as a title change. I'm going to, for the benefit of the record, restate the motion to move CS for House Bill 381 as amended. So Representative Herron.
I move CS for House Bill 381. 1534/E as amended from committee with individual recommendations any fiscal notes, and it was a title amendment.
Okay. That will conclude our business today, and then for Wednesday, this committee has a very light schedule ahead as it relates to House bills. We are waiting for Senate bills to come over. We have a confirmation scheduled for Wednesday. And we have, at this point, we don't have a quorum for Friday. We have no Thursday hearing scheduled. And so we're our docket is very clean at this point. And so we will wait for April and Senate bills as they begin to come over. Any questions, concerns? Okay, seeing none, then we are adjourned.